you have to wonder what it was that attracted so many people to John. It was not an easy trip for many people to come down to Jericho. The trip down wasn't so bad, but you had to go up to Jerusalem, which is quite a distance and quite a height, several thousand feet in altitude climb. John the Baptist was actually down in the Dead Sea region, which is even lower than Jericho, and it's hot. And why did they go out there? John is very, very, he's what I call a truth teller, you know. He told it like it was. And people, they're attracted by this. You know, he would come up, the other gospel, Luke has got some of his other sayings. Soldiers would come up and he would say to them, be content with your pay. How would you like somebody to say that to you? Don't we all want more money? Especially if you're getting a minimum wage. Be content with your pay. Quit complaining. Or slaves would come up and he would say, obey your masters. It's not very politically correct. Stirs up a little bit of trouble. You know, so he sees the Pharisees and the Sadducees coming and just lays into them, you brood of vipers, who told you to flee the coming wrath? He saw right through them. Now, this is a gift that's rather rare in the church. We do see this in others. The best example of that I can think of were two fairly modern saints. One was the Curie of Ars, who, towards the end of his life, they actually had trains that were dedicated from Lyon and Paris going straight to Ars, all filled with pilgrims wanting to go to confession to the Curie of Ars. They would take a number and get back in line at the end of the day and wait as long as 7 days to go to confession to this man, who heard confessions 22 hours a day. Can you imagine? What was the attraction? The attraction was that if you left a sin out, he would tell you what it was and tell you to get back in line when you decided you really wanted to do a good confession. He was a truth teller. He could see things. He would give advice. He had a gift of God. Thank God I don't have that gift. I don't want to hear confessions for 22 hours a day. Just kidding, Lord. And there's another modern saint. Can anybody think of who it is? Padre Pio. Padre Pio had this same gift, and people came from all over the world so that he would hear their confession. And if you were there just to see him, he knew it. And he'd throw you out with his Italian temper. He'd say, get out. He was very abrupt. He had no patience with people that were in there simply to gawk at him. He often knew what to say before the person asked. It's a very rare gift in the church. John has this gift, and it's a very precious one. We see a little bit of this. A priest that I hear about constantly from those of you who watch EWTN is Father Carapi. I have to admit, I don't watch him because I just don't have time, but I hear about this because those of you who've watched that, is that he's got a power of preaching that in a way is something that a parish priest is a little more difficult to do. It's his charism on television. It's a prophetic gift, you know, this kind of thing. Well, I say this because, in a sense, we're all called to be truth tellers. A person that I've always called a truth teller, some of you may remember Father Charlie from last summer. He's an old friend of mine, and even before he was a priest, we called him a truth teller. He was not afraid to tell it like it was, and sometimes it got him in trouble. But he was almost always right. He lived in community, in a lay, secular, charismatic community, which I was a part of, and if you had an issue, he was not afraid to tell you what it was. But that was his charism, and it still is. And as a parish priest, that's a two-edged sword. You see what I mean? We got a little taste of that when he was here for the week. Being a truth teller, how do we respond when somebody tells us the truth? This is a little tricky, isn't it? The Pharisees and Sadducees did not kill John, but he went too far when he criticized Herod and his wife, Herodias. Now, how in the world did you get a couple with a name like that? Herod and Herodias. Herod's not so bad, but Herodias, I'd change my name, you know what I mean? But she did not like She was living in a kind of a marriage that that was not acceptable to Judaism. I'm not sure what it was. And John was not afraid to tell her, and she had the power to shut him up, and by God, she did. She served his head up on a platter. And is there anybody in this room that has not had their head served on a platter by somebody who didn't like what you said or did at some time in your life? Haven't we all? If you haven't, wait, because it will happen to you. And I can tell you, pastors get it more than anybody, because we're leaders, you know, and you inevitably offend people. It's part of our job, I guess, you know. It's not what I expected when I became a priest, but sometimes things have to be said. And God help me, you know. But oftentimes things are said to me. I remember I went to give communion to a lady. Now, she's now deceased. God rest her soul. And I was so proud of myself. I said, I'm going to go down this list. And it was a number of years ago. I'm going to see everybody on her communion list. And I did. And I got to her, and I said, how are you doing? She said, I don't like you, Father. And I said, why is that? She says, well, and she told me something that it wasn't a sin or anything like that, or a policy thing I did. It was some sort of a mannerism that she didn't like. And she said, I'm so mad at you, I won't shake your hand if I come to church. And I'm also encouraging other people to do the same thing. And I thought, whoa, so much for my, no good deed ever goes unpunished. So I walked out and I thought, I'm never going to go see you again. But, you know, a couple weeks later, somebody did to me what she said I had a habit of doing. And I had a conversion moment, and I realized that was a grace of God. She didn't say it right, but God was calling me to change something. He said it wasn't a sin, but it was some sort of a thing that was irritating her and a few other people. And I thought, I heard the truth, and I didn't respond the correct way. I had to be converted. And, you know, and I saw her, I did see her again, and she never brought it up again, actually. But it was God speaking. And, but you know, as often as not, we're on the receiving end of things that are not true. And people will criticize us for things that we simply did not do, or they misread our motives, and this is even more common. How do we respond to this? Well, I had this happen to me once, fairly recently, where I said something to an old friend of mine, not a parishioner, somebody I've known for decades, and I offended him somehow, and I still don't know what it was I said. I tried to find out. I didn't understand. And so I sent him an email back saying, I don't understand, and I received about 2 pages worth of all the gaffes I've ever made in the last 20 years. None of which I agree with. And I responded with my own list that I sent back to him. I'm not real happy about that. None of it was untrue. But what would the proper response have been? Silence. Silence. But that's hard to do. Jesus, of course, talks about the right use of speech. And indeed, we're all called to be truth tellers at times. The main arenas that this will occur is at work, at home, at school, among our friends. This is our life. You know, people don't usually do this at the store or someplace like this. It usually occurs in relationships of people that we know. And we can try to serve up the person who gives us the bad news with their head on a platter, but that really doesn't do us any good. And, you know, Advent is a time when we are called to be asking God, what area of my life can I be more pleasing to you? I've been asking myself this, and I feel God calling me to learn to rejoice a little more. That's next week's homily. Next week is Rejoicing Sunday. I find it very hard to rejoice in all circumstances. What is the thing God's calling you to do? Is it right use of speech? Maybe to challenge a few more people. Maybe not to be so offended when you are challenged. Because St. John makes it very clear, St. John the Baptist, he says, we are all orchards in God's orchard. We're trees in God's orchard. What image is better for the Willamette Valley than trees in God's orchard? He says, if you're a fruit tree, God expects you to bear fruit. If you don't, someday he's going to cut that tree down. It happens to all of us. And when he does, he's going to plant something else there. So while we are here, while we're planted in the ground, in the earth, we are called to bear fruit, and God's periodically going to prune us. And I got a tree that needs pruning in my backyard, not to bear fruit, but just to look better. I'm sure the tree would not like to hear, won't like to be pruned if it could say something. It said, don't do this to me. But it's what it needs. And Advent is a time when God may be trying to prune you of something. We have to allow him to do that because he has our best interests at heart. If we're all leaves and no fruit, this is of no benefit to anyone. We're not here just to look pretty. And sometimes the medicine is very painful. But all the fruits are very wonderful when they come out. And so our Lord, it's a constant challenge between these two competing things. On the one hand, to listen to those voices that call us to repentance in our lives. On the other, to be able to forgive those who have said something that was wrong. And I've been on both sides of that, both receiving and giving, as I know all of you have. But God works everything to good. And as we approach this second week of Advent, again, we ask God, what is it you want me to do, Lord? What area of my life might I learn to be more pleasing to you?